was in 1947 and 1949, we passed the National Security Act and the CIA Act, and those two acts in combination allowed money to be clawed out of the federal government and federal budget and spent in non-transparent ways. So we created a secret way of funding very big projects through the governmental mechanism. It all comes back to a point after World War II where literally the government lost control of the technology. We had the most powerful, secretive black technology in the world, including some that we brought over from the Nazis. And a lot of what we're dealing with goes back to the fact that we've had since then 50 to 60 years of incredible non-transparent governmental flows going into basically corporate-controlled technology that many of us don't understand.
Apple, Microsoft, and Tesla. All three have been on a roll since mid-June.
New concerns tonight about the social media giants' role in fake news and elections.
These firms have too much power, our economy, and democracy.
Everything they're doing online is being watched, is being tracked. Every single action you take is carefully monitored and recorded.
Their personal data, which is like gold.
We have this trusted digital identity built.
Ja, en bij mij gingen er heel veel vraagtekens. Wat is een digitale portemonnee?
10 of the 17 Sustainable Development Goals cannot be met without first closing the identity gap.
Digital identity is an absolute horror.
Das kommende Jahrzehnt muss Europa's digital decade sein.
We won't be able to do that with traditional systems.
The regulation for the EU digital COVID certificate.
Vote is closed. And it is adopted.
The passport infrastructure is in place. You bring in that digital currency, and you've got this total control.
What happened? Where is the critique of capitalism itself, which has led to a system of horrendous inequality?
Across the globe, our identity is being traded for billions of dollars. How is it possible that something so seemingly elusive as our data has so much value? Data is the new gold, and this is the gold rush. But what does that mean for us? What does it mean for our privacy and for our freedom? Wrapped in a veil of marketing, grand narratives, and noble causes, we are presented with a future which may be less rosy than it appears. The Next Web is one of the world's leading tech events. One of the speakers is the former CIA and NSA contractor, Edward Snowden. In 2013, he blew the whistle on the large-scale spy activities that the US government conducted on citizens and governments worldwide. His message is clear.
The idea that there was a system of global mass surveillance in the United States, in the United Kingdom, in Australia, in New Zealand, in Canada, right? The media treated this possibility as a conspiracy theory because they could not see why. When we got the evidence, things quickly began to change. But what threats are we missing today? And I think when we look at what's happening as like these post-pandemic restrictions, everybody closes borders instantly, then you've got to install apps and like all of these different changes. And then just a few years later, you've got in China, 25 million people in the city of Shanghai who are not allowed to leave their apartments, who are not allowed to even order groceries. Like if you couldn't leave your apartment and you couldn't order groceries right now, how long would you last? I think this is where we are moving toward a moment in history right now. That we all feel things are going wrong. Everybody sees like the plate beginning to slip in slow motion. We're all reaching it to try to catch it. But if we had known that plate was going to fall, we would have a better chance to catch it. And I am worried that that the plate is going to break. Banks are the biggest example right now where, you know, they can cut you off at any moment. You have your money in their hand, and they're supposed to, be good stewards of it. But we have begun to see people dislocated from their accounts because of protest activity, right? Because of the movements they support. But governments realize they have new tools that they've never had before. When there is such a popularity, when there is such a dependence on a certain structure, on a certain network, how do we leave it? How do we depart it? How do we progress from it? How do we recognize that the system as it exists today is not good enough? And to recognize that it could be better, and to recognize that it should be better, and to recognize that individually and collectively we can make it better. But it will not become better unless we force that to happen. I don't mean violently. This can be achieved nonviolently. And I think this is both the great challenge and the great hope of our time. And we are being asked by history in this moment right now, what are we going to do with it?
Spearheading these developments is the digital identity. The digital ID industry is a booming business. According to analysts, its potential revenue is $30 billion in 2024, which could rise to $50 billion in 2026. It should come as no surprise that big tech corporations like Microsoft, IBM, and MasterCard are heavily represented in the lobby for a global system of digital IDs.
Jedes Mal, wenn eine Website uns auffordert, eine neue digitale Identität zu erstellen oder uns bequem über eine große Plattform anzumelden, haben wir in Wirklichkeit keine Ahnung, was eigentlich mit unseren Daten passiert. Und das muss aufhören. Und aus diesem Grund wird die Kommission demnächst eine sichere europäische digitale Identität vorschlagen. Eine, der wir vertrauen und die Bürgerinnen und Bürger überall in Europa nutzen können, um alles zu tun, vom Steuerzahlen bis zum Fahrradmieten. Eine Technologie, bei der wir selbst kontrollieren können, welche Daten ausgetauscht und wie sie verwendet werden.
Arno Wellens is an author and investigative journalist, specializing in finance. For his book, The Euro Gospel, he has immersed himself in the policymaking of an ever-expanding Europe. Wellens keeps a watchful eye on the progress of the European digital ID.
Welcome to this press conference following the Euro.
Hoe het praktisch eruit ziet, de Digital Identity Wallet, is dat jij straks een appje hebt op je telefoon. En daarin zitten eigenlijk al jouw wachtwoorden en je rijbewijs, bankafschriften en elektronisch patiëntendossier. Dat zit allemaal in één appje. De Europese Commissie heeft gezegd, nou, wij komen met een toolkit in het najaar van 2022. En daar zitten alle elementen in en alle eisen en de middelen voor hoe dat er specifiek uit moet komen te zien. Maar mensen krijgen straks een app op hun telefoon waarmee ze zowel in social media als met hun bank, als met mail, als met de overheid kunnen communiceren en hun vaccinatiebewijs kunnen tonen. Dat is hoe het er praktisch uitziet.
A European Digital ID is in the works for every EU citizen. An app will enable us to identify ourselves with our smartphone and choose which personal data we wish to share, both online and offline, with government institutions and private companies throughout the European Union. A so-called digital wallet will enable various attributes to be incorporated into it, such as government records, insurance documents, travel documents, personal data such as social media accounts, bank records, diplomas, credit card records, medical records, and vaccination status. As founder of Privacy First, Bas Filippini keeps track of all digital identity developments.
Kom ik uit de tijd van idee, plicht, nee. En we zitten nu al in de fase waarin we dus hebben over digital ID, waar al je informatie op staat. En met uitsluitingsmogelijkheden om deel te nemen in het sociaal-maatschappelijk verkeer naar een stuk. Helemaal de foute dingen. Maar het kwam ook omdat ik langere termijn kijk. En ik zag het al aankomen. feitelijk is de digitale identiteit natuurlijk te verzorgen dat jij beheer en beschikking hebt over je eigen data. En een stuk gemak over dat je niet al die pasjes nodig hebt en dat je eigenlijk met één drager jezelf kan identificeren en door de maatschappij kan bewegen.
Is daar iets mis mee? Nou, nee, want het is heel erg handig. Want als je dat in je wallet stopt op je iPhone, op je smartphone, dan geeft dat enorm veel voordelen.
Ken van Ierland is a digital entrepreneur and big data specialist. He assists large tech companies with their digital transformation processes and knows the value of data like no other.
Ik was laatst in Sevilla, wil ik een elektrische fiets huren. En toen moest ik door tal van applicaties stappen om uiteindelijk naar een uur dat ik gebruik kon maken van die fiets. Terwijl als we hadden gebruik gemaakt van de wallet waar al deze informatie had, dat in 10 seconden had dat gekund.
The digital identity gives us a prospect of convenience, security, and economic progress. But at the same time, there are grave concerns, such as here in Frankfurt, where people are worried about their privacy, safety, and freedom. By connecting every citizen's data, it would be technologically feasible to surveil, manipulate, and exclude people from society on a large scale. Thus, in the wrong hands, this could become the ultimate means of control. During the 2020 pandemic, we saw how such means can be used to exclude people from society. The plans for a digital ID have been around for much longer, but the corona crisis gave governments free rein to fast-track a QR code ID system as part of the digital COVID certificate.
Toen werd op een gegeven moment gezegd, nou ja, dus als je gevaccineerd bent, of je hebt een herstelbewijs, of je hebt een testbewijs, dan, als je aan een van die drie voorwaarden doet, krijg je een coronacertificaat. En met dat, alleen met dat certificaat mag je een café in, mag je een bioscoop in, mag je het zwembad in. Daar werd dus eigenlijk een soort digitaal poortje gecreëerd. En dat digitale poortje kon je alleen maar door als je dat bewijs had.
Tijmen Wisman teaches privacy and data protection law at the VU University of Amsterdam and is chairman of the Platform for Civil Rights. During the pandemic, Wisman expressed serious concerns about the introduction of the Dutch government's 2G policy. 2G meant that only recovered or vaccinated people were allowed to visit public places, such as restaurants, cafes or swimming pools.
Daar waar de risico's op besmetting het allergrootst zijn. De volle kroeg, de festivals, de evenementen, overal waar mensen bovenop elkaar staan. Daar wordt het mogelijk om alleen mensen toegang te geven die gevaccineerd zijn of genezen van corona. Ofwel de 2G-aanpak die we ook in steeds meer landen om ons heen zien. Getest, die derde G, getest kom je dan niet meer binnen.
En het werd dus gestimuleerd om je te vaccineren. En uiteindelijk is er een rapport uitgekomen van de TU Delft waarin werd aangegeven, dit werkt helemaal niet. Maar toch gingen we ermee door.
In January 2022, the Technical University of Delft stated that the Dutch COVID pass was not functioning as planned. Their research, commissioned by the Dutch Ministry of Health, showed that the 2G and 3G policies contributed little to prevent the spread of the coronavirus.
Je ziet dat mensen bereid zijn om, ook al is bepaald beleid inmiddels achterhaald door de wetenschap, dat mensen toch gewoon blijven gehoorzamen aan die technocratische uitsluitingsregimes die zijn gecreëerd. Maar je creëert daar wel een hele gekke samenleving mee. Want de gehoorzamen mogen blijven meedoen en de mensen die kritische noten plaatsen, die worden langzaam eigenlijk uit de samenleving en uit de structuren van de samenleving geweerd. En daarnaast maak je dus ook burgers handhavers. Dan wordt nu opeens de burger die staat bij het voetbalveld te controleren of jij wel je stippeltje hebt in de buitenlucht. Ik vind niet dat je op zo'n manier een samenleving moet inrichten. Ik vind de QR-samenleving een fundamenteel verkeerde keuze.
We were called, I think it was month of March 2021, if I'm not mistaken. We were told that we have to vote on an urgent procedure to pass the COVID certificate. And I asked, why do we have to do this? Because an urgent procedure means that we will not have debate. We will not have access to many informations. There will not be a lot of discussions. We will just vote on something that we don't see. You know, I don't feel comfortable, you know, to vote on something that I don't know. Well, you know, you're asking too many questions. Anyway, we have a majority. Then I said, I can't vote for this.
Christian Terech is a Europarliamentarian who, together with other members of parliament, actively opposed the introduction of the Green Certificate in the European Union. Terech is of the opinion that, foremost, more transparency is needed concerning the contracts for the purchases of 1.8 billion vaccines, a deal that Ursula von der Leyen personally negotiated with Pfizer. The European Court of Auditors also requested an explanation, to no avail. It wanted to know how the contracts came about, on the basis of what scientific evidence, and of what conditions. But von der Leyen refused to share the text messages that she sent to Pfizer's CEO.
So after a lot of pressure in the parliament, as the article says, these contracts were disclosed to us and to the public. And I want to show you some of those pages. And you tell me if this is okay for the European citizens to be exposed to this situation where they cannot come to work, they cannot enter a store, they cannot go with their kids to schools, where they cannot freely move from one country to another, unless in one situation is vaccinated with one of these products. So these are the contracts. These are the pages.
In a free society, freedom, liberty is the rule. So you see how they changed the relationship now. Now in order for you to freely move, you have to explain or you have to show certain things in order to have the privilege to freely move.
But COVID is an infectious disease, right? So it's...
Well, it is. But everything that they've done had nothing to do with COVID. COVID was just a pretext. But what I know for a fact from different sources inside of the European Commission is that even before the Green Certificate was approved initially by the European Parliament, the Commission was already talking to certain companies, you know, to build up the infrastructure.
And here is mine. So everyone who is fully vaccinated or tested negative or has recovered from COVID can get one.
The idea for a digital ID originated before 2011. The OECD, an organization with 38 member states, set up to stimulate economic progress and world trade, wrote a report that advised governments to adopt a digital ID strategy. And in 2017, the European Commission released its first action plan for the creation of an e-government with a digital ID for all Europeans.
Het eerste wat er gedaan werd, er moest een app komen. Nou, ik heb ook nog in die commissie gezeten over de app. Waarom moet er überhaupt een app komen? En wij waren als Privacy First, waren we daar principieel tegen. Maar dat is gewoon doorgedrukt. Nou, veel langer waren ze al bezig met die app. En hiermee kon een versnelling gecreëerd worden. Dus, en die app is in feite al een eerste stap naar Digital ID. Nou, dan is het nog maar een kleine stap om daar wat gegevens aan toe te voegen. Dat gaat natuurlijk van kwaad naar erger. En zo is in feite COVID misbruikt als een soort social credit systeem, ook meteen binnen die app. Want je werd uitgesloten als je niet het juiste gedrag vertoonde.
Maar mensen zullen altijd zeggen, ja, we leven toch in een democratie. Een social credit systeem zou hier nooit komen.
Nee, maar we zien al dat we erheen gaan. En ik vind de COVID-pas was stap 1 binnen een democratie. Hoe ver je eigenlijk al kan gaan.
The Green Certificate kind of educated people to use a QR code to show that they were vaccinated when they entered a store. Now you have the digital wallet. They say right now that it's not mandatory, right now. But they might pass a law, for example, that will say, well, it's not mandatory, but if you don't have it, you cannot do certain things.
James Corbett is an investigative journalist and documentary filmmaker. In his renowned documentary, How Big Oil Conquered the World, he shows how, worldwide, sovereignty is increasingly being lost to technocratic forces. According to Corbett, we are entering a new era of extensive governmental control.
There are different paradigms that we enter into as history unfolds and as different events take place. And I think for the past couple of decades, certainly the terrorist events of September 11, 2001 was used as one of those paradigms of control of society and was used as the excuse for the implementation of all sorts of measures that would not have been doable, really, without that justification, that presumed justification.
In response to the attack on the Twin Towers on September 11th, 2001, George W. Bush signed the Patriot Act, a controversial bill that would make it easier for the American intelligence agencies to surveil and eavesdrop on citizens on a large scale. The act was to be temporary, but this act has been extended to date in modified form and also has implications for American companies beyond the national borders of the U.S.
Today we take an essential step in defeating terrorism while protecting the constitutional rights of all Americans. With my signature, this law will give intelligence and law enforcement officials important new tools to fight a present danger.
What we have seen over the past couple of years is the rollout of the next iteration of the paradigm of governance for the planet, which is the biosecurity paradigm. It is now not in the name of some turbaned boogeyman hiding behind some corner who wants to blow you up. Now it's the virus that's hiding behind some corner and wants to infect you. And one of the obvious techno-solutionism answers to this problem is the COVID passports, the vaccine certificates. The specter of this was floated almost immediately in the wake of the lockdowns and other things that we saw in March of 2020. So the vaccine passport becomes the Trojan horse to the digital identification. Once people get used to the idea that they're going to have to present their vaccine passport in order to be allowed to travel to a different country, or even to travel to a different region within their own country, or even to go shopping, then it isn't a large step to say, okay, well, now we are going to implement that exact infrastructure for all access to all government services, access to leave your home, and people will be more willing to accept it.
So it seems that the COVID pandemic has opened the doors to a new era, an era in which control and surveillance are facilitated and further normalized. A digital ID, to which all our data is linked, seems to be the ultimate means to this end. But the question arises, where does this push towards the centralization of our data stem from? And whom does it benefit?
Er zijn twee redenen om dit te willen. En de ene kant is omdat er handel zit in jouw data. Want als al jouw data aan elkaar gekoppeld zijn, dan kunnen analisten die kunnen kijken wat jij allemaal uitgeeft, hoe jij te beïnvloeden bent. Er zijn mensen die jouw bestedingspatroon en jouw eetpatroon willen koppelen aan medisch onderzoek. En dat heet een European Union Dataspace. En daar zitten gewoon alle gegevens van mensen in. En al die plannen liggen er al. Daar zit een hele industrie achter. De bedrijven die appjes bouwen bijvoorbeeld.
The French defense and tech company Thales is one of the corporations that is involved with the development of the EU digital wallet.
Hello everyone, meet Lucy, student in psychology. And me, her digital ID wallet issued by the government to offer a wide range of identity services. In fact, I am a handy way of proving and protecting her identity both online and face-to-face. Let's have a closer look at what I can do. I can help governments to better communicate with citizens. Right now, I'm reminding Lucy of the appointment she needs to schedule for her mandatory vaccination.
Hoe sterk is die technocratische lobby vanuit techbedrijven? En...
Heel groot. Het gaat om geld. De hele digitalisering wordt aangejaagd door big tech. Kijk, die overheid heeft een ruif van duizenden miljarden die ze ter beschikking stellen om idealen na te streven die zij graag voor hen willen bouwen tegen woekerprijzen. En dat zie je dus ook in het hele vraagstuk rondom digitalisering. Is dat die overheid ziet dat als je dat op een centrale manier dat kan gaan inrichten. Dan zie je dat al die Franse, Duitse bedrijven die zeggen, wauw, dat is geweldig, want het zijn miljarden projecten. Daar worden honderden miljarden geïnvesteerd om een platform te creëren om het identity van 500 miljoen Europese burgers vast te leggen. En om daarmee ook een hele workflow te bouwen van wieg tot graf, om je daarin te gaan besturen.
Vanuit het surveillance capitalism is er natuurlijk een soort van gratis model ontstaan op internet om consumenten bij jouw dienst aan te laten sluiten. De stap die daarna is gekomen is manipulatie van die gegevens om jou te bewegen in een richting waar je nog helemaal niet aan gedacht had. Totdat deze stroming gecombineerd werd met politiek. En daarbij zie je dat, hey, als wij gedrag kunnen voorspellen en manipuleren van consumenten, dan kunnen we dat ook wellicht doen van kiezers. Nou, en die hele efficiënte manier om te sturen, ja, is natuurlijk de droom van elk groot bedrijf.
I think we can see the drive towards a digital identification coming through a number of groups that are identifiable, that have identifiable memberships. You could look, for example, to ID 2020 Alliance and its founding partners, including Microsoft and Accenture and the Rockefeller Foundation and Gavi, the Vaccine Alliance. Or you could look at something like ID4D, the World Bank project, which boasts among its membership the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, the Omidyar Network, the UK government, NORAD, which is attempting to introduce identification for development.
Across the globe, we see a range of large NGOs cooperating with governments and central banks to develop the digital ID, such as the ID4D initiative, a project of the World Bank, and the ID 2020 Alliance, a partnership between mainly big tech companies such as Microsoft and Accenture, and philanthropic foundations such as the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and the Rockefeller Foundation.
Nou, wat je ziet, achter de digitale identiteit is de industrie. Dat is een heel duidelijk verhaal. En de industrie heeft een nieuwe truc gevonden, namelijk zich voordoen als NGO. Daarmee komen ze in feite heel onafhankelijk over, maar het is een dekmantel, zou je het kunnen noemen. En dat zie je dus de World Economic Forum, je ziet ID 2020 projecten, Gavi en nog een aantal van dat soort dingen. En wie zit er dan achter? Ik kom elke keer dezelfde namen tegen, maar het is in feite een verzameling van big tech, big finance, big pharma, big media.
I think the idea of the nation state as the organizing principle for power in the world is an increasingly antiquated notion since the founding of the post-World War II order. In regional groupings that are increasingly, I think, openly and undeniably controlled by transnational interests of multinational corporations, financial interests, NGOs of various sorts. And we see that reflected in the membership of these various digital identity alliances.
One of the largest and most influential NGOs is the World Economic Forum, founded by the German engineer and economist Klaus Schwab.
Your Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, it's my great honor to participate for the eighth time at this important meeting.
The World Economic Forum is a lobby organization, known mostly for its annual gathering in Davos, Switzerland, which is attended by 3,000 paying members and selected participants, among them investors, CEOs and political leaders.
In de politiek wordt ontkend dat zij grote invloed hebben. In hoeverre is dat waar?
Nou, dat klopt natuurlijk niet. Een lobbypartij heeft altijd invloed. De lobbyisten lopen in en uit in Brussel. En dat geldt ook in de Verenigde Staten. Dus dat ze geen invloed zouden hebben, dat vind ik echt puur naïviteit. Vervolgens zijn er natuurlijk brieven, ook naar buiten gekomen, door WOP-verzoeken, waarin heel duidelijk wordt gezegd, neem een voorbeeld van de minister Kaag. U doet mee aan deze werkgroep, strictly off the record. Waarom strictly off the record?
In december 2021, the Dutch government made binding agreements with the World Economic Forum, namely, the execution of projects launched by the World Economic Forum, such as the Food Innovation Hubs, a network for global food innovation. So the World Economic Forum can initiate specific public-private partnerships in the Netherlands. And the Dutch government directly adopts policy goals from the World Economic Forum. One of the ways the World Economic Forum influences governments is the publication of research papers. It is common for these to be copied directly into the policy directives of governments. In 2016, the World Economic Forum published the report A Blueprint for Digital Identity. Stakeholders worked on the research for 12 months, among them ID 2020 Alliance, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, MasterCard, Visa, Deloitte, the ING Bank and the Dutch Civil Service, DigiD.
Uit hun jaarrekening blijkt dat ze elk jaar zo'n 370 miljoen euro krijgen. En daarvan gaat 40 miljoen euro op aan die conferentie waarbij al die mensen klimaatneutraal met hun privéjet naar Davos vliegen. En de rest gaat gewoon op aan het maken van die rapporten. En die rapporten die zijn 100% gefinancierd door die grote multinationals die er belang bij hebben dat die boodschap wordt verspreid. Dus het is een heel groot lobbybureau. En dan kun je je afvragen, ja, hoe omvangrijk is het? Hoe invloedrijk is het? Nou, in de jaarrekening van het World Economic Forum staat dat zij een actiecommissie hebben. En dat zien zij als een ministerie van Buitenlandse Zaken van het World Economic Forum. Zo heet dat ook. Dat kan rechtshandelingen verrichten. Dat kan contracten sluiten met de Nederlandse overheid. Als er een geschil ontstaat, dan is niet de Nederlandse overheid het hoogste gezag. Maar dan moet er naar een internationaal tribunaal worden gegaan. Een arbitragecommissie. Dus de regering die accepteert dat World Economic Forum gewoon als een contractpartner. De vraag die je moet stellen is het gezond dat een groep bedrijven zoveel invloed heeft op het beleid van de regering?
En dat betekent eigenlijk, we hebben geen tegenmacht internationaal op industriële belangengroepen. En daarmee zie je dat ze in feite de macht pakken en het geld pakken. Maar als je met bedrijven te maken hebt en belangengroepen die 10 keer de grootte hebben van jouw nationale economie en macht en relaties wereldwijd, ja, dan ben je eigenlijk kansloos als land.
In February 2021, the Dutch ruling coalition presented a policy letter concerning digital ID. In this letter, the Dutch Secretary of State refers to 2 reports, one by the World Economic Forum and one by McKinsey. The World Economic Forum mentions 3 causes for the rollout of the digital ID. The prevention of an exponential growth of various login data. The lack of control over user data. And that 70% of European citizens do not finalize their online purchases, causing a loss of potential revenue for web stores. The McKinsey report indicates that digital ID would offer economic opportunities. But this is based on research done in various developing countries, such as Nigeria, India and Ethiopia. So in the end, its economic rationale appears flawed.
Die webwinkels, Amazon, bol.com, die en hun lobbyisten, die hebben berekend via een Deens bedrijf dat er voor $4 triljoen per jaar aan impulsaankopen niet doorgaat. En dat komt als jij op je telefoon zit, hè, als jij een reclame ziet, dan gebeurt het heel vaak dat mensen moeten inloggen. Ze moeten een paar stappen doen vanaf het zien van de reclame tot de daadwerkelijke betaling waarmee de koop definitief is. En dat zou makkelijker gaan als wij een digitale identiteit hebben die gelijk is op al onze devices. En dat is de enige economische wetenschappelijke onderbouwing die de regering aan de Nederlandse Kamer kan presenteren. Dus dat wij meer impulsaankopen gaan doen, zodat de economie stijgt. Dat is winst voor de grote bedrijven, voor Amazon, bol.com. En dat wordt gepresenteerd als een winst voor burgers. En daarom wordt dat gedaan.
Ik heb het idee dat we steeds minder democratisch worden. Dat het democratisch gehalte van de Europese samenleving steeds meer ten doel komt van een kleine groep. En dat we democratisch niet meer gehoord worden, dat er voor ons beslist wordt door mensen die niet democratisch gekozen zijn. Mevrouw van der Leyen is benoemd en is niet gekozen. Frans Timmermans is niet gekozen, die is benoemd. Dus al die mensen, al die commissarissen die er zitten, ook die grappenmaker, die voormalige CEO van Atos, die benoemd is tot Eurocommissaris voor digitalisering, is gewoon benoemd. En die mensen die bepalen wel ons leven. Dat is gevaarlijk.
Everybody's pretending that we live in a democratic process, but we are not. We have some people in power, usually unelected people, unelected bureaucrats, who are not answering to anybody. On top of that, they are lacking any kind of transparency. You know, everything is segmented. You just see, you know, a proposal comes on your desk, and usually there are backdoor deals before a proposal come to us. And seeing what was happening, for example, with the green certificate, what is happening now with many other things where there's clearly lacking any kind of transparency, this is a problem.
Christian Terhej grew up in Romania during Nicolae Ceaușescu's oppressive regime that lasted from 1967 to 1989. With the corona measures, such as the introduction of the European Green Certificate, Terhej is very concerned about what are, to him, recognizable patterns.
Everybody in Romania was under severe distress back then, and fighting for pretty much for survival, because they rationalized food, they rationalized electricity, they rationalized gas. If you dare to complain or to oppose, for example, what was happening, you were immediately persecuted by the Secret Service. Seeing what is happening right now all across Europe, especially now being a member of the European Parliament, I don't want that experience again by Western Europeans in this case, and this is the reason why I'm heavily fighting for fundamental rights, for freedom and liberty.
We're sort of at a knife edge at the moment. If we carry on going down the same path that we've become used to, and younger generations just take for granted, I think we are all going to be absolutely royally screwed, privacy-wise, human rights-wise, even democratically.
Annie Machon is a former employee of the British intelligence agency MI5. In 1997, she and her ex-partner David Shaler became whistleblowers by lifting the veil on large-scale illegal spying by British intelligence agencies. Among other things, David Shaler revealed to the newspaper The Mail on Sunday that in 1996, the British Secret Service paid £160,000 to various terrorist organizations, with the goal of assassinating Muammar Gaddafi, then leader of Libya. A number of his bodyguards were killed in the assassination attempt. Knowing the paper was about to publish, Machon and Shaler decided to escape to Europe.
If you're traveling around Europe and you know that MI5 and the secret police are hot on your trail, because we've been on the inside, we knew all the tricks of what they could do in order to trace us. You had to pay everything in cash, you couldn't use ATMs, you couldn't book hotel chains because they could find out through those systems. So it's very much a case of just getting on a train with no warning, not prepaying for any tickets, disguising ourselves. So we keep moving around all the time.
After what Machon had seen and experienced, she became an author, activist and public speaker. With her knowledge of data security, she fights for more privacy and security online.
What we are effectively facing to our lives online are a number of key threats. One, of course, is the intelligence agencies, the sort of state-level national actors that have this panoptic power to scoop up all our information globally. There's also the other threat from corporate spy companies. I suppose the most notorious over the last few months was something called Pegasus,